When the Dean, Mark Oakley, asked me to give this sermon, he explained that his plan was to persuade college fellows to talk about aspects of their academic subjects, geography in my case. Did my academic subject in any way connect to the human search for God? My first reaction was to say no. My kind of academic geography has had nothing much to do with the human search for God. I have spent my career investigating how people in different tropical countries use and sometimes misuse the resources of their environment, both today and in the past, particularly their rainforests and coral reefs. Much of my fieldwork has been in Melanesia in the Southwest Pacific, especially in Papua New Guinea, Solomon Islands, and Fiji. The human search for God was never part of my research agenda. Yet, before replying to Mark Oakley, I did have second thoughts. It wasn't really true that I had had no engagement with religion during my fieldwork. Every community where I worked in Melanesia was Christian and had been for many generations. Although I found that the religious beliefs and practices of Melanesians were sometimes different from our own, I came to realize that in almost every case, they were following a form of religious syncretism, much as we see today in our own society. Religious syncretism is the blending of two or more religious beliefs to form a new system. Historians tell us that Christianity itself arose from a blending of radical new beliefs and practices with some older ones from the pre-Christian era. Our New Testament reading was about a man called Simon, a sorcerer who had bewitched the people in Samaria. Religious syncretism was clearly seen as a threat by the early Christians. The process continues today. Consider the case of Reverend Sue Parfitt, Father Martin Newell, and Philip Kingston. These three were recently charged with obstructing trains on the railway under the Malicious Damages Act. At Shadwell Station, they and others had climbed onto trains or glued themselves to carriages before praying and then being arrested. These people are all members of Christian Climate Action, a group linked to Extinction Rebellion. In court, they told the jury they felt compelled by their faith to take action to protect God's creation and prevent runaway climate change. This belief that nature is sacred is spreading, I think, in Western society, as we saw in the rhetoric surrounding the COP26 meeting. You could say a new religious syncretism is emerging. During my visits to Melanesia, I have seen other examples of syncretism, usually where people have retained some old beliefs and practices, but within a new system. The new system is one dominated by Christianity, a faith introduced to Melanesia by missionaries in the 19th century. A famous example is George Augustus Selwyn. As an undergraduate in this college, and later a fellow, Selwyn worshipped in our old chapel out there in First Court. At that time, Melanesia was a no man's land, not yet colonized by Britain or France or Germany. In 1841, Selwyn became the first Anglican bishop of the new British colony in New Zealand. And in 1849, he founded the Melanesian Mission, today called the Anglican Church of Melanesia. After he had retired, Selwyn returned home and was invited to preach the sermon in this new chapel on the occasion of its consecration on May the 12th, 1869. What did he say on that occasion? He may have talked about the human search for God in New Zealand and the various Pacific islands where he had worked. We know that Selwyn was quite progressive, thinking that what was needed in Melanesia was not just Christianity, but also schools and hospitals. However, I am sure that religious syncretism was not part of his missionary agenda. He would have hated the idea that what people needed in the Pacific was a blend of Christianity with indigenous beliefs and practices. And yet, today, elements of syncretism have emerged, at least in those parts of Melanesia that I know best. I can give you examples from my recent fieldwork in Solomon Islands, where I was working with Matthew Preble, a New Zealand archaeologist. Our joint project in Solomons is an attempt to reconstruct the pre-colonial societies that flourished until about 1920 in the forested interiors of the larger islands. Helped by a team of local villagers, Matthew and I mapped and excavated sites now abandoned to the encroaching rainforest, settlement sites, agricultural terraces, and so-called sacred sites. We were trying to reconstruct the social lives of Solomon Islanders before those lives were transformed by British colonialism. This transformation included their migration to new coastal villages, a decline in population with introduced disease, and the arrival of Christian missionaries. As well as mapping and excavating sites of agriculture and settlement, Matthew and I would have liked also to study one of the sacred sites marked by standing stones. In the old days, religious rituals took place at these sites, including funerals and burials. However, we were firmly told we were not allowed to dig in such places. Rather like a Solomon Islander coming to Cambridge and asking to excavate our abandoned medieval chapel in First Court. I think you can imagine the college's reaction. I will not discuss in detail the spiritual beliefs of Solomon Islanders today, but the people I know certainly still believe in sorcery and have continued respect for the old sacred sites. We were forbidden to excavate, but we were permitted to map the standing stones at one site, where we found, to our surprise, that the stones were clearly still in use. We saw various recent offerings, including unopened tins of corned beef, deposited beneath the stone slabs of an ancient burial. It reminded me, when visiting the Neolithic site of Avebury in Wiltshire, of seeing pieces of chocolate wrapped in silver paper and pushed into cracks in the standing stones. New Age syncretism, perhaps, or modern pagans reclaiming the site. Although some Solomon Islanders are still using the sacred sites of their ancestors, meanwhile their Christian practices are wholehearted and sincere. Matthew and I both attended church in the village for Sabbath day services. These crowded events included lively discussions on the Bible. On one occasion, I remember, the book of Job sparked off a heated debate. We heard a passage from Job earlier. The book of Job explores the nature of evil in the world and the role of God in allowing evil things to happen. If, like Job, we try to live a righteous life, why then does God punish us with misfortune? And why, despite everything, do we remain so poor? A missionary like Bishop Selwyn, hearing this lively debate, would surely have been impressed, just as he would probably have disapproved of the protests by Christian Climate Action. What I can see from my observations in Melanesia and in our own society is that the human search for God takes different but somewhat parallel forms. Some people dance around the standing stones at Avebury or Stonehenge and leave ritual offerings there. Or, as a protest, they glue themselves to railway trains. Others live tins of corned beef under the stones of sacred sites to show respect for their ancestors. I believe that all religious practices reflect, to some degree, a blend of different spiritual beliefs, despite attempts by the hierarchy to impose a uniform dogma. So, to conclude, while straying far from my roots in academic geography, I have found that it is religious syncretism that enables many people in the world, perhaps most people, to shape their own search for God.